Hi, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not enjoying our haunting episodes of The Grave Talks, I invite you to check out our true crime and disaster podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of Dark Side of Wikipedia. He was the man who genuinely believed he could do no wrong. The ultimate narcissist. Or was he something more? Something much darker? Something we may not even have a word for? Today, the disturbing story of murder, lies, and the belief that one is invincible. The story of Ted Bundy on the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Theodore Robert Bundy was an American serial killer who kidnapped, raped, and murdered numerous young women and girls during the 1970s and possibly earlier. After more than a decade of denials before his execution in 1989, he confessed to 30 homicides that he committed in seven states between 1974 and 1978. The true number of victims is believed to be higher. Bundy was regarded as handsome and charismatic, traits that he exploited to win the trust of victims in society. He typically approaches victims in public places, feigning injury or disability or impersonating an authority figure before knocking them unconscious and taking them to secluded locations to rape and strangle them. He sometimes revisited his victims, grooming and performing sexual acts with the decomposing corpses until putrefaction and destruction by wild animals made any further interactions impossible. He decapitated at least 12 victims and kept some of the severed heads as mementos in his apartment. On a few occasions, he broke into dwellings at night and bludgeoned his victims as they slept. In 1975, Bundy was jailed for the first time when he was incarcerated in Utah for aggravated kidnapping and attempted criminal assault. He then became a suspect in a progressively longer list of unsolved homicides in several states. Facing murder charges in Colorado, he engineered two dramatic escapes and committed further assaults in Florida, including three murders, before his ultimate recapture in 1978. For the Florida homicides, he received three death sentences and two trials. Bundy was executed in the electric chair at Florida State Prison in Rafford, Florida, on January 24th, 1989. So today, the story, which you'd be surprised we hadn't gotten to yet, of Ted Bundy. It's going to be a multi-parter because there's just so much information with this insane individual. And we want to work our way through it and give it the time it deserves. If you like the show, be sure to press subscribe, whatever platform you listen to us on. We greatly appreciate that. A review on Apple Podcasts, also greatly appreciated as we grow in those rankings over in the true crime categories. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you on today's episode. Thoughts thus far and memories of good old Ted.
I don't quite know how to answer that. You know, I started, what, it's a Netflix or something I started watching a while back, and I haven't finished it. But I had forgotten just how twisted it really was.
You talking about the Bundy tapes?
Yeah,
I just finished it on Netflix. And then I thought, oh, we're going to do that for an episode today. The thing that was so crazy about Ted Bundy to me was his character, because he was so unlike any other serial killer or, you know, killer of high profile or trial of high profile in charisma and confidence and just how far he would push the envelope of what you would do in an acceptable way. I mean, he represented himself in court in third person. And watching that was just like, what the hell? I mean, I knew Ted Bundy was a horrible person and murdered people, but I didn't realize, you know, this was slightly before my time when he was in court and doing these things. But I was unaware that of all the antics that he did and all the times he escaped and all of that. But just when in front of the camera, just charismatic and the last person on earth, if you had to say who's the killer on here, if you muted it, he's the last person you would pick in almost every time, because it's like, this is not that profile of that individual at all.
And you know, he was a good looking guy. So good looking guys or girls, you know, you get a pass. It's well, like that.
And charismatic.
Serial murderer.
Even though he was a good looking guy, if he had a personality that was just shit, you would, I mean, if he was like, women, you know, but no, he was just so respectful and the way he delivered his message. And it was, I mean, obviously the looks I'm sure helped him, but his charisma is what got me just going, God, he so many ways he could have, I mean, the judge, even at the end of one of the hearings was like, you know, I really wish I could hear from you more as an attorney, but you chose to go down this path and ruin your life this way. There's so many ways that you could have taken your God-given abilities and done the right thing, and you could have been an amazing attorney. And so
someone like him was never going to do the right thing.
That's the thing, you know. But had it been used for good, could have been very successful. Could have been very, you know, but something was missing there. Something was missing. Yeah. For those connections in his brain to be that way. I have an interesting anecdote later I'll talk about that I learned in that story or in the Netflix documentary. Remind me about the apple pie later, okay?
Oh, okay.
And I'll know what I'm talking about, because it was an interesting one when we get into some of his family. Let's continue into the story of Ted Bundy here on the dark side of Wikipedia. Biographer Ann Rule, who had previously worked with Bundy, described him as a sadistic sociopath who took pleasure from another human's pain and the control he had over his victims to the point of death and even after. Bundy once called himself the most cold-hearted son of a bitch you'll ever meet. Attorney Polly Nelson, a member of his last defense team, wrote that Bundy was the very definition of heartless evil. Ted Bundy was born Theodore Robert Cowell on November 24, 1946, to Eleanor Louise Cowell and Elizabeth Lund, or at the Elizabeth Lund home for unwed mothers in Burlington, Vermont. His father's identity has never been confirmed. His birth certificate is said to assign paternity to a salesman and Air Force veteran named Lloyd Marshall, though other accounts state his father is listed as unknown. Louise claims she had been seduced by an old money war veteran named Jack Worthington, and the Kings County Sheriff's Office has him listed as the father in their files. Some family members have expressed suspicions that Bundy might have been fathered by Louise's own violent, abusive father, Samuel Cowell, but no material evidence has ever been cited to support this. For the first 3 years of his life, Bundy lived in the Philadelphia home of his maternal grandparents, Samuel and Eleanor Cowell, who raised him as their son to avoid the social stigma that accompanied birth outside of wedlock. Family, friends, and even young Ted were told that his grandparents were his parents and that his mother was his older sister. He eventually discovered the truth, although he had varied recollections of the circumstances. He told a girlfriend that a cousin showed him a copy of his birth certificate after calling him a bastard, but he told biographers Stephen Michaud and Hugh Ainsworth that he found the certificate himself. Biographer and true crime writer Ann Rule, who knew Bundy personally, believed that he did not find out until 1969 when he located his original birth record in Vermont. Bundy expressed a lifelong resentment towards his mother for never talking to him about his real father and for leaving him to discover his true parentage for himself. In some interviews, Bundy spoke warmly of his grandparents and told Rule that he identified with, respected, and clung to his grandfather In 1987, however, he and other family members told attorneys that Samuel Calla was a tyrannical bully and a bigot who hated blacks, Italians, Catholics, and Jews, beat his wife and the family dog, and swung neighborhood cats by their tails. He once threw Louise's younger sister, Julia, down a flight of stairs for oversleeping. He sometimes spoke aloud to unseen presences, and at least once flew into a violent rage when the question of Bundy's paternity was raised. Bundy described his grandmother as a timid and obedient woman who periodically underwent electroconvulsive therapy for depression and feared to leave their house towards the end of her life. Bundy occasionally exhibited disturbing behavior at an early age. Julia recalled awakening from a nap to find herself surrounded by knives from the kitchen and Bundy standing by the bed smiling. Bundy is a senior in high school. In 1950, Louise changed her surname from Cowell to Nelson, and at the urging of multiple family members, she left Philadelphia with her son to live with cousins Alan and Jane Scott in Tacoma, Washington. In 1959, Louise met Johnny Cupper Bundy, a hospital cook, at an adult singles night at Tacoma's First Methodist Church. They married later that year, and Johnny Bundy formally adopted Ted. Johnny and Louise conceived four children of their own, and although Johnny tried to include his adoptive son in camping trips and other family activities, Ted remained distant. He later complained to his girlfriend that Johnny wasn't his real father, wasn't very bright, and didn't make much money. Bundy had different recollections of Tacoma when he spoke to his biographers. When he talked to Michaud and Ainsworth, he described how he roamed his neighborhood picking through trash barrels in search of pictures of naked women. When he spoke of Polly Nelson, he explained how he pursued detective magazines, crime novels, and true crime documentaries for stories that involved sexual violence, particularly when the stories were illustrated with pictures of dead or maimed bodies. In a letter to Rule, he asserted that he never, ever read fact detective magazines and shuddered at the thought that anyone would. In his conversation with Michaud, he described how he would consume large quantities of alcohol and canvass the community late at night in search of undraped windows where he would observe women undressing or whatever else he could see. Bundy also varied the accounts of his social life. He told Michaud and Ainsworth that he chose to be alone as an adolescent because he was unable to understand interpersonal relationships. He claimed that he had no natural sense of how to develop friendships. "I didn't know what made people want to be friends," he said. "I didn't know what underlay social interactions." Classmates from Woodrow Wilson High School told Rule, however, that Bundy was well-known and well-liked there, a medium-sized fish in a large pond. Downhill skiing was Bundy's only significant athletic avocation. He enthusiastically pursued the activity by using stolen equipment and forged lift tickets. During high school, he was arrested at least twice on suspicion of burglary and auto theft. When he reached age 18, the details of the incidents were expunged from his record, which is customary in Washington. After graduating from high school in 1965, Bundy attended the University of Puget Sound for 1 year before transferring to the University of Washington to study Chinese. In 1967, he became romantically involved with a UW classmate who is identified by several pseudonyms in Bundy biographies, most commonly Stephanie Brooks. In early 1968, he dropped out of college and worked at a series of minimum wage jobs. He also volunteered at the Seattle office of Nelson Rockefeller's presidential campaign and became Arthur Fletcher's driver and bodyguard during Fletcher's campaign for lieutenant governor of Washington State. In August, Bundy attended the 1968 Republican National Convention in Miami as a Rockefeller delegate. Shortly thereafter, Brooks ended their relationship and returned to her family home in California, frustrated by what she described as Bundy's immaturity and lack of ambition. Psychiatrist Dorothy Lewis would later pinpoint this crisis as probably the pivotal time in his development. Devastated by Brooks' rejection, Bundy traveled to Colorado and then further east, visiting relatives in Arkansas and Philadelphia and enrolling for one semester at Temple University. It was at this time in early 1969, Rule believes, that Bundy visited the Office of Birth Records in Burlington and confirmed his true parentage. Bundy was back in Washington by the fall of 1969 when he met Elizabeth Koepfler, identified in Bundy literature as Megs Anders, Beth Archer, or Liz Kendall, a divorcee from Ogden, Utah, who worked as a secretary at the University of Washington School of Medicine. Their stormy relationship would continue well past his initial incarceration in Utah in 1976. In mid-1970, Bundy, now focused and goal-oriented, re-enrolled at UW, this time as a psychology major. He became an honor student and was well-regarded by his professors. In 1971, he took a job at Seattle's Suicide Hotline Crisis Center, where he met and worked alongside Ann Rule, a former Seattle police officer, an aspiring crime writer. She'd later write one of the definitive Bundy biographies, The Stranger Beside Me. Rule saw nothing disturbing in Bundy's personality at the time and described him as kind and empathetic. That's the preview. If you want to hear the full episode, be sure to subscribe to Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. That's Dark Side of Wikipedia.